start things as well. Okay. As Mary mentioned, my name is Baruch Levinsky, and I am a financial planner and an Israeli licensed portfolio manager. I've made Aliyah with my wife, and now we have family here, about 19 years ago. We spent the first number of years in the Jerusalem area, and the last 15 or so we've been in the Beit Shemesh area, where I have a financial planning practice, and I help many Olim, like yourselves, go through the integration process from a financial perspective. And if I was to summarize what I want to try and give over tonight, is that you need to change how you're thinking about your finances from what you were doing over there. Again, I know there's a few people here that have been here a long time, but most of the people who I'm assuming that I will be participating this evening are relatively recent Olim who are coming with a certain mindset in terms of how their finances worked in their former country, back at home. And the question is, how is it going to work here in Israel? So what I want you to do is kind of leave behind everything that you learned back in terms of how you were manage your money at home, and focus on here, how am I going to make it work here in Israel? Okay? So what is financial planning? Okay, I'm not going to go through every point on all the slides, but I want to we'll use it as a basis for discussion. Okay, financial planning isn't a one-time event. It's a process. Okay, it's something that you start with. It's like you make a plan, and then over the years, you adjust the plan as necessary. I heard a wonderful analogy in terms of how a plane travels once. Okay, when a plane travels, from what I understand, what it was explained, is that the plane actually is always constantly going like this. It's slightly off target, and it's finding its way to its final destination, but it doesn't travel like this. It actually travels like this, and then it goes a little bit off, and it comes back. And then it goes a little off, and then it comes back. That's exactly what we do with financial planning as well. We put a plan together, and then we see how things work out. We put a budget in place, and then we adjust things as necessary. Okay? So it's not just a one-time process. It's not something that we just sit and we do one time, and then that's it. We forget about it. We had a plan in place when we made Aliyah. We had a budget in place for our first year or second year or whatever it might be. No, it's a process that we continually have to be revisiting. That doesn't mean that you have to spend a tremendous amount of time doing the financial planning, but it does take small incremental work to get things to work. So I want you to try and think about that. It's like creating a roadmap for yourself of where you want to be financially. Okay? And you are internalizing through that process the things that are most important to you. I'm not going to stand here and tell you what's important to you. You have to decide for yourself what's important. You've all made Aliyah. You all are here. So what's important? Do you want to live in Yerushalayim? Are you happy living in a smaller community? Do you want to have a larger house? Do you need the two cars? Do you want to send your kids to this type of school or that type of school? Do you want to have X, Y, and Z or not? It's totally up to you. What you have to do is just define what's important to you and then build your plan around that. I can't tell you what that success means. You have to decide for yourself what that means. Okay, and that really is so critical as far as the Aliyah process, because many times people will come and they'll have a certain expectation. The expectation is, well, I lived in a certain type of house, and I lived in this type of community with this type of standard of living, and they're surprised that it doesn't work exactly like that here, that the standard of living might be lower, or might not be as easy as they thought to find a job that's paying the same amount of money as they had. Okay? That doesn't mean that it's wrong here. That doesn't mean that it's any worse here. It's different, and it is different financially. Okay, so we have to be thinking through how we personally define our financial success. And if we can define that, so then it's much easier to put together the plan. Okay? You have to distinguish very, very much between wants and needs. Okay? So it's a very blurry type of distinction, because many times, again, we're used to a certain standard of living, and it becomes a need. Okay? two cars a need. If you live in a certain community in Kutzart, it might be that that's a need. But when you live here in Yerushalayim, and if you're doing most of your work in the city, and you're not necessarily commuting outside the city, so then maybe you don't even need a car at all. Okay. Needs versus wants is a very, very important thing that I'm going to stress as we go along. And I'm going to go and talk also about the difference between long-term and short-term. That we always have a certain ideal, right? How financial planning, how it should work when we come. It doesn't always work that way. We have to juggle many things. And in Israel, we have to juggle a lot of things because there are a lot of things that are changing all the time. Okay? I want to go through two quick examples, one in terms of a short-term plan and one in terms of a long-term plan. Okay, how many people, just raise your hands if you're in the first year of Aliyah. Three, and how many are in your second year of Aliyah, after Aliyah? More than two? More than five? Okay. Got to mix a few in New Orleans, but okay, in the first year of Aliyah, people need to be thinking about how they're going to immediately integrate into society, how they're going to make ends meet over that course of a year, what that means bringing a list with them. What does it mean in terms of having emergency funds? What about jobs? Do they need to get a job immediately? Are they dependent on having a job immediately? Do they have savings that they can live off of? Where are they going to be living? Do they need to rent? Are they buying a place? Okay, there are major decisions that you need to be thinking about in terms of putting together a plan for the first year. Okay, that's unique in the sense of like you're going to put together a short-term plan as opposed to a long-term plan. A long-term plan will look at things like retirement. Well, it'll look at large expenses like weddings and simchas, special events. Okay? If you're going to look at your long-term plan, if I was going to kind of crystallize what your long-term plan should represent, and it's especially important here in Israel, is that you should be focusing in the long run on spending less than what you earn. I know it's kind of like a simple, sounds so easy, and everybody really should be doing it. It's not easy, as we know here, because ends, you know, are much harder to bring together because, as I'm going to show you, things are expensive here, and salaries are in many cases, are not as high as they are in Kutzlar. Okay? But that doesn't mean that you can't do it. And we have a major advantage here that I'm also going to discuss, which is that it's built into many of our salaries that we are saving a very large percentage of our income as well. Okay, up to 25% of our income gets saved here on a monthly basis. And that, even if we're not saving ourselves the money on a monthly basis, we're not automatically putting money aside, we are in many cases. Okay, so if you're in that situation where you're a regular subsidiary or a regular worker who has an employer that's putting away money for them, so then you are saving money. Okay, that may or may not be enough for your long-term retirement plan. That really depends on how you define your retirement and how much money you need for retirement. But that is a really critical element in the long term. Okay, so the long-term plan will look at things like debt payments, education, your special needs, family obligations. Do I want to be opening a business? Do I have long-term plans that I need to be able to travel back to Flipstar? Okay, how does retirement fit into my, am I going to afford over the years to be able to pay back my house? Do I want to move to a different place? All those things are like long-term planning. Okay? They are two separate types of plans, but they're both important. And for New Orleans, you need to be thinking in the short term. But as you're going on, so then you'll go from the very, very short-term focus of do I stay in on Ulpan? Do I get a job? Where do I live? Do I have to find a community? What's the standard of living that I'm going to adjust into here? Versus long-term planning. And you can't ignore either one of them. You need a short-term plan, and then you need to be able to adjust it over time. Okay. The first part of tonight, we're going to talk about budgeting. We're going to talk about why it's so important and how to do it. Just the practical how-to. Okay, then the second half, I'm going to get into the specifics of all the different types of expenses that we have and how you can actually cut back and what are the critical things that you need to be thinking about. Okay, so why is budgeting so important? Okay, budgeting is important because it gives us the fundamental information that we need to make decisions. Okay, if you don't have that information, how can you make decisions? I give the analogy of accounting, right? If you're running a business and you don't have an accounting department, you don't have any information about how the business is doing. Is the business running a profit? Are they losing money? Where's their money going to? Is it going to this department? Is it going to marketing? Is it in R&D? How is your money being spent? If you have no idea, okay, as a business, how your money is being spent, if there's no accounting, you can't make any changes. You can't have any feedback in the system to make any of those changes. That's exactly what budgeting is. Budgeting is not just the recording of the information, however. It's the evaluation of it. Okay? It don't get caught up in the exercise of, I need to record, and then I record. I know people that I've counseled over the years who come in, and they have this, like, stack of accounting records of everything they've spent over the last 5 years. And they can tell you, oh, I spent on this, and then I ask them, what did you do with it? Like, I know you have all that information, but what did you do with that information? Nothing. Many times you'll get stuck on the recording. The recording is not the essence. The recording is just to give you information to make decisions, to help you make better decisions about where you want your money to go. Okay? It's going to help you solve those problems. It's going to give you better control over your resources, because you're going to see exactly where your money's going. And when you see it black on white, where your money went to, where your money went to this month, where your money went to this year, so then you're going to make better decisions, because you're going to be able to prioritize in your own mind what's more important. Many times you'll go through a budgeting exercise and you'll see, this is what we spent. We spent 10% of our money on insurance. And then you're going to say, oh, we spent 45% on housing. Right? I met with a family last week. We went through their budget. We went through trying, like, analyze. It came out that their housing expenses were almost 60% of what they were earning. 60%. That means they had basically nothing left over after they had their housing expenses, their rent and their electricity and their water, for almost anything else. So they have to make a fundamental decision. Is that important to them? Meaning, do they want to stay in that location that's going to cost them that much? Or do they want to start moving into other places that might reduce their housing expense and give them more money for other things? The only way that they can make that decision is if they have that information in front of them. I met with another family once that their insurance was eating up everything. They had every insurance under the planet. They had house insurance, and they had contents, and they had for their cars, and they had accidents, and UD, long-term insurance, and they had life insurance, and they were spending 20 or 30% of their expenses on a month just on insurance. And then when they looked in, they wondered, well, why are we not able to get by? Because so much of that money is going to insurance. That's not to say that insurance is not important. Insurance is important, but everything is important, right? That's really what we see. Everything is important. What we have to prioritize. We have to put things in a certain order of what's most important and what's less important. And things that are most important, they're going to take over part of the budget. And things that are less important will get put down the list, and then by nature you will say, those ones I'm not going to be spending my money on, okay, because it's less important. Okay? Budgeting also helps communication, because when it's clear black on white exactly where your money's going and where the family unit has identified in advance where you want your money to go, there's much less conflict, because it's not like one spouse going and spending money on this and another spouse going ahead and spending. You both agree that this is where your money's going to be. So it's a natural outcome that you don't have to be talking and arguing and going back and forth about money. Okay? It's just a much easier process, because then at the end of the month, you're going to see exactly, and I know also for many, many people, having a control in place where you know that this is going to be reported, and I'm going to sit down with my spouse, and we're going to see exactly where that money went over the course of the month, makes people a lot more accountable than if they just spend money and there's no accounting, and they don't know where it is, and the spouse doesn't know, and the money's just gone, and what can you do? Okay? I hold that budgeting is the most important tool that you can use to control your expenses. We're going to talk about all the different expenses as we go through the evening. All of them, okay? But this is the most important tool. I can give you all kinds of hints for cutting back on this and that, but if you understand that identifying where your money is will give you more impetus changed than anything else, okay, then right, it's, everything else is like just already the, you know, the implementation. Okay, why is it so hard to make ends meet here? Okay, this is a chart that came out of my book. This talks very recently, in the last year, these were the statistics about how do prices compare here in Israel as opposed to in other major Western countries. And you see, besides a few of the expenses at the bottom, fruits and vegetables, communications, everything else is more expensive here. So while many people will come and they'll say, I'm not spending tens of thousands of dollars on tuition, and it's so much cheaper here in Israel, so for the average consumer goods, it's not. And if you add to that the other side of the coin, where it's salaries, where the standard of living in Israel is approximately two-thirds of the standard of living in the United States or in other Western countries, and in many professions, it's much greater than two-thirds. So you see that higher expenses on the one hand, lower revenue, makes it just much harder to get through the month. And that's why it's such an adjustment for many Olim when they come here, because if they have jobs and they had a certain standard of living and you were able to survive there, it doesn't mean that they can survive here. Okay? They might have to make adjustments. Okay? So how do we get started? On the chairs, there are a couple of different handouts. Okay? We're going to look at two of them right now. Okay. One of them is, if you look at it, has fixed expenses versus variable expenses. And the second one, it has all these different categories down the left side. Okay, so I'm going to reference them in terms of the ABCs of how to get started in terms of budget. Okay, the first thing you do, now I'm going to reference the examples as just pure examples about how to start the budgeting process. It doesn't matter to me what you use. People can use a pen and paper, and they can write down the information by hand onto this spreadsheet or onto anything. They can use programs like Microsoft, you know, Money or Quicken or all these online programs as well to help them keep track of their budget. That makes no difference. You have to find the tool that works for you. Okay? We're going to go through this as just an example. The reason why I like these spreadsheets is because on one page, you can get a clear idea of absolutely everything that you've spent over the course of an entire year. Okay? If you look on the left-hand side, let's take this example, the one that's broken down into different categories. Okay? You have the different categories. Obviously, you can personalize it for your individual expenses. Subcategories, right? We have the first column, which is the budget. The budget is the average expenditure per month that we're expecting to spend over the course of the whole year. That doesn't mean that every month that your budget is going to be exactly what you thought it was going to be. Some months you're going to spend more and some months you're going to spend less on specific expenses like car insurance. Right? You might have car insurance that you're going to pay off for 3 or 4 months for the entire year. So you're going to have 3 months that it's going to be more. But over the course of the whole year, it will average out to what you had put in there as a budget for your car expenses. The key is, though, that when you're using more money over 2 or 3 months, okay, that the rest of the year that you're at least saving that money, right, because what you've done is you've spent more in 2 or 3 months to pay for your insurance, but on the other month, you actually have to save that, okay? So, again, it's just that month. The budget is just going to give you the average. And then this gives you the ability to track over the entire year exactly where your money is going. Now, why is it important that I track over an entire year? And why isn't it enough that I track 1 month? If I track 1 month, that should give me enough information, no? Why do I need the whole year?
There's so many things that you, with the car insurance, that you only need maybe 1/3
of the
insurance.
Okay. Yeah, hold on. Month to month. Okay, right. So we have different expenses that change, whether it's your car insurance or like in the summer, you might have more expenses for camp, or there might be a certain time of year that you go on vacation. Okay? There's certain periods where your expenses are going to be different. And there are also different periods of time where we know that our expenses are going to be different. if you create a budget that averages what you're spending in February, you're going to be in big problems, big trouble for the whole year. Because we know that February, generally, although this year I know Purim falls out in February, but generally there are no chagim in February. It's the shortest month of the year. It's in the middle of the winter, so there's no major expenses in terms of like vacations and summer camps and et cetera, et cetera. And you've already paid all those expenses that you had at the beginning of the year for school. So if I could create a budget just for February, it would look really, really easy. Oh, I can get by. I'm making 12,000 shekels, and here's my budget of what is going to be on a regular month. But the problem with doing that is that, as we know, over the course of the year, there are many, many other things that come up, okay, including unexpected things. So we have to build our budget, and we have to track it over a whole year at least to get a really good idea of where the ups and downs are in our budget. Okay? Pesach is going to be higher expenses just because we know Pesach is coming and those have more expenses. The beginning of the school year, the summer month. Okay, so you have to be looking at it, and when you create your budget, you have to build your budget taking into account all of those ups and downs. Okay? So the first step is to create your categories. The second step we talked about is estimating your budget. And that's what you'll be completing in the first column. The first column is your target, what your average expected expense is going to be on a monthly basis now for the entire year. And there should be months like February, like January, where it's going to be below what you have there as an average, because there are certain things that you're not going to have. And so the key will be to ensure that during those months where it's really supposed to be less is that you actually are spending less. Okay, but otherwise, if you're not tracking things, there's no way that you're going to know how much you really could afford, because you're going to have that same amount of money. Most people's salaries, okay, I'm not talking about independent workers that's trying and running their own business. Remember, the average person who's earning a salary is earning pretty much the same salary the entire 12 months. So if they get the same salary in February as they get in July or in September, they're going to think, wow, I'm doing great this month. Now we have all this money in the bank, and they're going to go out and they're going to spend it. But if you can see very clearly that, no, this is the month that I'm supposed to be saving because I don't have any car insurance, and I don't have any chuzim, and I don't have any extras, so then you'll know that that's not really extra. And that's why you need to be looking at it over the course of an entire year. Okay? Once you've estimated your budget, okay, then you're going to start the recording exercise. Okay? People dread the recording side of things. Okay? Because not everybody's organized. Not everybody wants to actually know what they're spending. Okay? But the easiest way that I have found to do it, okay, is to take all of your receipts. Okay? If you're buying things over the credit cards, so you don't even necessarily have to save your receipts, although I would definitely recommend that you do it for other reasons. Okay? You keep your credit card statements. You have copies of your checks. And then basically the only thing that you need to have a separate record of is the cash that goes out of your hand. And for that, you can keep a separate little notebook. You can put it into your phone. You can do whatever you want. Once you have all that information, you're going to just be putting it away. You're going to file it over the course of the month. And then once a month, you're going to sit down. And you're going to just gather everything together and start putting it in to those different categories. Okay? And you're going to summarize it here. And so you're going to have the month of December here. Okay? The next step after that, after you've recorded, okay, and this is probably the most important step in the process, okay, once you have that information, you now have to reevaluate your budget, your goals. Okay? I thought I would have enough money for X, Y, and Z, and I see that we didn't remember about this, and we forgot that, and this one was much more than what we thought, and now we have to go and we have to reevaluate. And we have to reset our specific goals about what we can spend, what we're allowing ourselves to spend on all these different categories, okay? And then we adjust the budget accordingly. Okay? And it's that process of every month. Okay? When you're doing it initially, you literally will be adjusting your budget on a monthly basis. You'll be looking at your specific expenses, and you'll be saying, I thought we could afford X, but we can't, because we forgot about X, Y, and Z. Okay? So it's an iterative process. You're going to be adjusting things and continuing to adjust. and then you're going to go back to number two, and like we talked about, redo your budget, and then start the process of recording again. Okay? I've found that most people are very surprised at how much they actually are spending. Okay? And I find that if that's the one most, like, toughest bit of information that gets fed back into the system is exactly how much you're spending, which surprises people and can motivate you more than anything else to start adjusting. Because many times we just think we know what we're spending, but it's not what we're really spending. Okay? Okay, this is the first one that we looked at. Again, the advantage of a, oh sorry, this is the one we didn't look at. This one is actually broken up between fixed expenses and variable expenses. Okay? This works very well for people who are on a very tight budget and they have a high amount of fixed expenses. So if they know they have a mortgage, they have certain things, whether it's, you know, school stuff, their health insurance, life insurance, whatever it might be, that's fixed. Okay? So then the first thing you do is after you have your revenue recorded, you take off all your fixed expenses, and then you see what's left for variable. Okay? This will give you then that variable at the end, which you now can choose among all the different other variable expenses. So you have to decide what's more important and what's less important. Okay? So it helps people that are on very tight budgets to see exactly what's going out and what is left after that. And it prevents you from kind of getting into this false sense of, well, I have all this money that's really around, because you might actually have large amounts of money coming in when your salary comes in or the like, but it's really not. It's like that false illusion of, well, here's a large sum of money that just came in, but really it's all been accounted for. Okay? And this prevents you from being mistaken that you have it. You really don't, because everything here on the top is all gone. Okay? The next one we spoke about was broken into categories. A lot of people like to just see it by category, because then they can see housing is costing me 30%. And then my living expenses, whoa, a lot of Boleans get caught in the mistake that they try to maintain the same standard of living in terms of how much food and what type of food they're actually buying here. And they find that they are spending much, much, much more than what the average Israeli family is spending. And so if they looked at their food expenses or their living expenses, which includes food and cuisine and anything like, you know, just general, like, household, like running operating expenses, they would find that that is a very high number, much higher than the average Israeli family. Anybody know what the average Israeli family is for spending on groceries in this country? Come on. Any guesses? 2,000 shekels. A very good guess. That's pretty much what they're spending. And how much is the a month? And what's the average North American family spending on groceries?
Where?
No, here. Oh. So I can tell you that it's much higher. I hope it's not close to that a week. Because if it's close to that a week, then the average family would be in really big trouble.
Really, really big trouble.
Okay. Again, this is either just a few comics that are available on the book that you'll see at the back. Okay, these are sample budgets also that are available on the book. We're not going to go through all of them. Example of a family of five, a retired couple, and a single. Again, it's not scientific. These are just examples so that people who haven't yet come to Eretz Yisrael, that they can see what approximately it would be. But it's going to change. Depends on where you're living. It depends on how much money you're earning. Somebody who is earning, in this example, the family of five, you have two wage earners that are earning almost 20,000 shekels. 20,000 shekels is almost 100%, almost double what the average Israeli family is earning on a monthly basis. So they might allow themselves to spend all this up to these other expenses, but the average Israeli family couldn't in this situation, because the average in the country is around 11,000 shekels. Okay, how do we make it work? Now, any questions about the practical, how to just start the budgeting process? So again, for most expenses, it's not going to be so hard to do. If your mortgage is coming out every month and you know it's 3,000 shekels, so then that's what it goes in. You don't have to start. If it's insurance and car insurance and you're paying your car insurance for 4 months and it's 600 shekels a month for 4 months, so then if you're not going to put 600 there, you're going to take 600 times 4, you're going to have spent 2,400. So the average that you're paying for that car insurance is 200 shekels over the course of the year. That is going to be there in the average, in the budget. But there are going to be those 4 months where you're spending more. So when we start looking at cash flow issues, we're going to say, oh, that month and those 4 months, I have an extra 400 shekels that I'm spending on insurance, so I have to get that from somewhere. Either I have to save for it in advance, either I have to finance it, take out a loan, go into overdraft until I can then save for it, but I have to save for it some months. So some months it's going to be 400 over, and all the rest of the other months it's going to be 200 or 300 under. Okay?
And for the rest of the year, you're saying it's in the end of January we budgeted ready, we didn't, at the end of February we budgeted ready.
So we're not budgeting. At that point in time, you're recording. The January, February, March is what you actually spent. At the end of every month. Correct. But the budget is going to tell you in advance what you can spend. It's going to give you that information to help you with the planning during the course of the month. It's going to tell you, okay? I'll give you a very practical example, okay? Food. Okay? Let's say we have a budget of 3,000 shekels. Okay? That's what we've identified in our budget of the average that we can spend over the course of the month. Okay, so how much money, let me ask the audience, how much money can you spend a week?
$750.
Okay, so that's one. Any other brave members who would like to posit an example, right, what they think we could actually spend?
Actually, it's 4.3 weeks in a month.
Okay, so that's the first point. It's 4.2 or 4.3 weeks, so it's really not $750. Okay. Second of all, we should be asking what month we're in. Okay? Because that 3,000 shekels, which is now the average over the course of the year, has to last us in February, and it also has to last us in April or in March, where we may have a Pesach or the other Chagim or the like. Okay? So if I'm in February, I might say, you know what, my food budget can only really be 2,500, because I know in another 2 months I have Pesach, and it's going to be 3,500 or 4,000 shekels. Okay? But what the budget will tell us is it already will tell us the gadol, in general, what I can afford to spend over the course of that month. And it'll help me. And then what I do is I look at it and I start breaking it down and I say, you know what? Okay, let's just take the example. It's 750 or it's 700 or 650 that I can spend a week. Now, how am I going to spend that 650 a week? Is that one shop? Is that two shops? Is it a Shabbos shop? Is it a trip to the Makolet? Does it include the kids' lunches? Does it include the entertainment? Or is that an entertainment budget if we go out for dinner or something like that? What's included in there? Okay? So you have to think through. And what you do is you build your budget. And then it helps you then to decide what you can spend. So in our example, what you would do is you would go to the grocery store and milk. If you're making a decision that says, I'm doing one big shop a week and I'm not going in the store another time, so you know you can spend 650 or 700 shekels over the course of the month, over the course of the week. So you go into the store, and the easiest way to control your spending is to take with you 700 shekels, not to take your credit card. Okay? Right?
Or to know when you're going to the checkout counter, like how much...
Correct. So the first time you do it, you will have no clue, or you'll try to, and you'll get to the checkout counter, and you'll put on the checkout counter the most important items that you want, and know that if you get over the 700, that you might actually leave stuff in those little bins that they have by the checkout counter that everybody throws in those last little things. Mm-hmm. Another example, if that's what you do, you would only get to the seven. After you do it a couple times, you know pretty much what you can afford and what you can't. And, you know, it's a process, but it means, though, that you are controlling. And that's why I said that the budget is actually the most important thing that will help you to keep with your expenditure down. Because if you know that you can spend 700 shekels and you go into the store with 700 shekels, you won't spend more than 700 shekels. Right? And that's really what you're trying to do. You're trying to find ways to constrain your spending. And so if you go in knowing that you only have that 700 shekels, that's it. You're not going to spend more than that. Okay? So food is relatively easy to do that with because you can literally take with you 700 shekels in. What do you do with your electricity? What if you made a budget for 500 shekels of electricity and all of a sudden you find you get a bill of 1,300 or 1,500 shekels? So it's a little more problematic, right? Then you have to be a little bit more proactive.
I was just going to say with the groceries, there's certain things that food is easy. The toilet paper and the laundry detergent and the things that you're not quite sure how long it's going to last for that you spend over the month. But then, you know, you go into the store and say, I have 700 shekels, and now they have a deal on 6 kilos of, you know, laundry detergent, which is going to be 75 shekels, whatever it is. So then that's where it gets hard to, you know, to pull back. But no, that's the time.
So you have to do trade-offs. Sometimes you can't buy things in bulk because you simply don't have the money in your budget. Right? I know many times, and we'll get to when we talk about food, but many times, you know, we'll say, well, if we buy a lot more of something, we're actually going to save a lot of money. But if we buy a lot more of something, many times we end up using a lot more of it because we have a lot more. Okay? And sometimes if we don't spend it on the bulk, then we don't use it as much. Right? But yeah, I agree. Okay? So again, how are we making it work? We're talking about the discipline involved. Okay? It creates mutual responsibility between spouses in families because what you're doing is you're tracking and you're setting goals together about what's important. And if you don't agree, so then you still are going to be setting some mutual goals. It could be that there's going to be a give and take, but you still have mutual responsibility. Okay? If you can't afford it and it wasn't in that budget, right? You created that column and it's not there. You don't have money in your budget for a vacation or a new this or this gadget. So then you don't buy it. It creates your own and helps you with your self-discipline. Okay? Right? Again, as we spoke about, you're using the tools that work for you. I'm not, you know, sold on any one tool. These are simple examples that you can use quick and you can use anything. Okay? Give yourself a buffer. When you're creating a budget, you don't want to budget yourself too tightly. You need to create it. You'll notice there are a couple of different things here, like pay myself first. And sometimes we call it miscellaneous. Right? Miscellaneous or unexpected, you actually have to budget. I tell people most of the time you should have at least 5 to 7% of your monthly expenses in unexpected budget. It means you know something that you are not expecting you're going to have. So if you already put a certain amount of money in there, if you are leaving yourself a little bit of a buffer so that it's much easier, okay, for you to not go over. Okay? Okay, what we're focusing on tonight, as I mentioned, is the expense side, the controlling of your expenses. Don't forget about the revenue either. Okay? We're going to really focus on the expenses and how to cut back. But there's a lot of opportunities out there for people to earn a little bit of money. And I'm not just talking about going out and getting a traditional job. I'm talking about entrepreneurial opportunities. I'm talking about even just government grants or government subsidies that might be available that you might not know about. Okay, there is a lot of money out there that you have to make sure that at least you know about what might be applicable for you. Okay? Many, many sources, whether it's Bituach Lumi or whether, you know, Kitzvat Yeladim or extra credits that they might give in certain circumstances that can help to reduce your taxes. You have to learn about the system so that you can maximize what you are earning as well.
Can I switch to that electricity? This is my first winter here.
Yeah.
And
I'm trying to be preventive. I don't know how what my electric bill is going to be, and I don't know how to find out. And I'm afraid that I will have, I know what my budget is, how much I have to spend, and I, you know, just like that 700 a little, I don't know how to figure it out.
Okay, so if you've never had an electricity bill, and so it can obviously be very difficult to estimate it. You can talk to me. You can talk to people who are in similar situations, right? Whether it's in a similar family situation or a similar size of apartment. Heating and cooling tends to be the largest part of our electricity bill. So if you're living here in your Yerushalayim and it's very cold and you're not used to the cold and you're running the heat 24/7, so that's going to have a major impact. Okay? So those are like ways that you can guesstimate. If you really want it to be exact, you can actually go ahead and check the meter and see how much you're using on a weekly or a monthly basis, and then figure out what the price is and do the math. Okay, that would be even more proactive in terms of like really estimating. I think it's probably enough if you would just get an estimate from neighbors or some other people in a similar situation, or wait until the first bill comes in and see. Okay, the problem is with some of the bills from the electricity companies is that they don't always come around and read your meter. They sometimes do it based on an estimate. And then you can be hit with a very large bill down the line. Okay? Something that you can sometimes maybe anticipate, but it's not easy to anticipate something like that.
You can call in the meter reading.
Yeah, correct. Yeah,
Mary. I was just going to add that for anyone who's sending their first list of year, especially if you come from a colder climate, we're sensitive to the cold in general. Heating here is much more expensive overall. So whereas in your city of origin, where maybe they keep it at 67 or 66, like my mom does, right, who's in her house, but you kept it at a cozy 70, 72, often that will lead to a much higher bill. If you wanted, if you think they can be focused in one room and you didn't want to run TV central, you can get yourself a smaller heater.
Let's look at some general tips. Okay, we talked extensively about the living within your budget. Okay, it's very important in general that you research prices here in Israel because they vary tremendously between different vendors, especially the large ticket items. They use the internet, talk to your friends. Okay, you can get great ideas about where the best place is to get the following item or two. Okay, negotiate. Okay, I can't stress this enough for people. Okay, it's a different culture. Israel, the financial culture, requires Olim and everybody, okay, to negotiate. I saw a survey recently that even Globe's done that up to, like, I think it was, they quoted up to 80% of Israelis negotiate on buying the average everyday things that we buy. So you have to realize if you're not negotiating, you're leaving money on the table. And I really hold that you can pretty much negotiate almost everything. Almost everything in this country you can negotiate. You won't always be successful, but you have to ask. Okay? Banks. I'll throw out a great example. The banking system. Many of us are used to, we walk into a bank and that's the price and here's the list price. The Israeli banking system is one big shook. Right? It's a marketplace. You have to go in and you have to negotiate. And you have to know that if you don't get the answer you don't get, you want at this clerk, that you talk to them. And you go to the next manager and you go to the for nothing. You're trying to get better and better deals. Takes a little bit of time. Don't have to do it aggressively, but you have to negotiate for the everyday average things that you're buying, especially when you're buying big ticket items. If you walk into a store and you ask, how much is this table, and they quote you 5,000 shekels, and you pay it, you're paying more than what you need. Sometimes all it needs is just be simple, you know, tell me the vakasha hanacha. I need a break. Give me some kind of a discount. You have to learn to open your mouth and ask for a discount. Okay? It applies to almost everything in the country. Okay? Buying used. I know many an old layer who have come to Israel and they haven't said, okay, now I have to kind of like go and buy everything from scratch, brand new. You can buy very, very good quality things, used things. You can use things like the Janglo and Tanglo and many of the other lists. Okay? There's things like these group buys, right? If you can buy things in groups and they offer daily, you know, specials on everyday consumer goods and restaurants and this and that, and you can get things at tremendous discounts. Okay? Especially if you plan ahead. There's even local versions of eBay that you can go there and you can get really good deals on them. Okay? Checking your bill. It's very common in the United States as well in other Western countries that statistically there is a mistake in one out of every 10 bills that you get from a credit card company. Okay? In Israel, I think it's even higher. Not just on the credit card, but on everyday bills. So if you go into the supermarket and you have a bill and you don't check it, I can tell you from our own personal experience that you're just leaving money on the table. You're losing out because they're making mistakes all the time. Whether it's typing in the wrong code or not giving you the sales price or putting in the wrong number, it happens every single day, all the time. Not because people are out there to cheat you, but just mistakes happen, and it happens a lot here. Okay? Planning ahead. Again, if you know that something is going to happen and you can already start thinking ahead, you can save a tremendous amount of money. You know that there's going to be school books. Already at the end of last year, start looking at your children's school supplies and seeing what you need to buy, who you can buy a book from. Use books. Okay? Thinking ahead in terms of clothing and the like. We'll talk about more of the details, but those are just examples of thinking ahead that can save you a tremendous amount of money. And as again, we talked about with the food example, cash. Using cash will help to control your spending because you can feel it. It's much harder for you to go over budget if you don't have that cash in your hand. Okay? Okay, let's talk about some very specific examples. Okay, the Israeli system. Why is it so important for you to understand the Israeli system? Okay? Here in Israel, there's no universal reporting requirement. Okay, for you to report your taxes. That means that your employer is responsible for reporting your salary and remitting taxes for you. They report and they deduct taxes from you based on what you tell them is your profile. But that's assuming that they put your profile into the computer correctly and that they've reported that you are an Oreh Chadash and they've reported that you have X amount of children or that you have a special needs child or that you were just released from the army or whatever it might be. Okay? You're relying on them to do that. If you don't understand what is your rights, how many credits you deserve, then you are potentially losing a lot of money. Okay? You have to check your Tlushma score, your pay stub, to make sure that they're doing it properly. If you have multiple employers, it's critical that not only do you do a Tu'um Mas, the Tu'um Mas is where you go to Mas Hakmasa, and you tell them that you have two different employers, and Mas Hakmasa will tell the employers how much to take off. But that's just an estimate. At the end of the year, you still have to do the exact calculation to make sure that they haven't taken off too much taxes. Okay? It's very important that you understand these basic rights. Okay? Women in general have more tax credits than men. Okay? It can help with your planning in terms of a family unit as well. If you have to make a decision whether the spouse, whether the husband goes out and gets a second job or your wife goes and gets a job, so it's much more tax efficient for your wife to go out and work. Because she is, not only is she going to get those tax credits that you've already used up on your lower salary, but she's also going to have extra tax credits related to the children. And they only go to her. They are not used jointly by family unit in this country. Okay, so you have to understand the basics. Okay, you have to understand things like Bituach Lumi. Okay, what potential benefits? There's a certain amount of benefits that Bituach Lumi gives in the first year right? The methodical tax begins. And then there's the 12 on the, if you are not making any income at all, there's like a certain income supplement they will offer. What are your maternity benefits? I know that in the past that we've had to go back some months off inside to be, well, to be in this situation, be 12 on the, multiple times to get them to correct what they paid out to us for maternity benefits because they just calculated incorrectly. So if you don't know, you have to ask. And if you don't have somebody to ask for, then pay somebody to help you with that process. But don't leave it just like, well, I can't read the Hebrew, and therefore I have to assume that it's correct. Because you can be leaving a lot of money on the table. You know, people who have handicaps, learning disabilities, et cetera, they can have extra benefits that are available through PQLME. And again, pensions, you have to understand how pensions play a part of your retirement plan in this country.
What's the penny account called?
10-year tax holiday is like, is that for 10 years after you've made Aliyah, you are free of reporting any income that is derived outside of Israel. Here in Israel. You do not have to report it here in Israel, and you don't have to pay taxes on it. So if you do not have an obligation to pay taxes or report those taxes at home, in your home country, like, for instance, countries not like the United States where United States, you have to file taxes, so you're going to be paying taxes there. It could still be a benefit because your tax rate might be lower there, but in other countries like Canada and the UK and South Africa, Australia, you don't have any tax obligations at home, and you might not have any tax obligations here in Israel either. So any money that you're earning outside of the country, whether it's passive or active income, could be completely tax-free for those attendees. Okay, also, well, I'm not going to go through some benefits. There's a very nice video on Nefesh Nefesh website, and there's a very long description of exactly the different types of benefits. Okay? What I wanted to stress here is that people have to understand what the benefits that are available in their profession are. What are the companies offering? Are they offering an extra month of pay like many of them offer, a 13th month? Are they offering a phone allowance or clothing allowance? Are they offering health benefits? Okay? Are they offering a Karen Yishtamut? If you don't know what these terms are and you start a negotiation process with your employer, undoubtedly you're going to be getting less than what you could if you were educated. So educate yourself. Go to the website. Ask other people about all the different possible benefits to make sure that you're not leaving anything on the table. Okay? And in terms of self-employment, also, you have to understand that there are different ways of structuring yourself if you're running your own business. It's not always just you have to do it like this. It's only one way. There are multiple ways that you can structure a business. So get that information, get the help if you need to, so that you can find out the best way to do it for you. Okay? We talked a little bit about food expenses. Okay, again, there are many, many, many resources online in terms of how to cut your food expenses. I still hold that the most important thing is that we should understand how much you actually can afford to spend. And then break it down like we did with that example. That 750 shekels a week, how much is it going to be? Is it going to be one big shop? Is it going to be a couple big shops? Is it going to be a small, you know, going to a Makola here and there? Everything has to come into that budget. Okay? Don't shop with your kids if you can. You know, shop early in the morning when you're not hungry. There are basic, you know, shop around because the prices can differ. If you're going into a Makola, the actual little small corner store, the prices will be anywhere from, you know, 30 to 50% higher in many cases. If you have to go and you have to go make the effort and go and shop and maybe shop in a couple different places, okay, to reduce your food expenditure, okay? What about transportation? Many people will come from North America, from other countries, and they will be used to having a car or even two cars. You have to ask yourself the question here in this country whether or not I can afford that, whether I can afford the two cars. How much is the true cost of owning a car? It's not just the gas that you're spending on a monthly basis. It's the gas, it's the parking, it's the insurance, it's the chova and the makif, the different types of insurance. It's any parking tickets. It's if you have an accident. It's any time off. It's the depreciation of the car. If your car is depreciating by 5,000 to 10,000 shekels a year, so that is a real cost to you. You have to take a look at the big picture and see whether I can afford to have that car. In many situations, it doesn't make sense for people to have a car or for sure not to have two cars. Okay? Again, you have to look at your individual situation and see what you can afford. Okay? What about mortgages? Mortgages are a very complicated area in this country. They have been told by different mortgage brokers that there are over 50 different types of mortgages available from the banks. And if you don't know what you're doing, and if you don't have the details in terms of how this one is structured and why this one is an advantage versus this, so then seek professional help. There are mortgage brokers out there. It doesn't mean the mortgage brokers are giving you the money. All the mortgage brokers in this country are doing are helping you to find the best mortgage. And you're going to pay for that service. There's no question you're going to pay. Generally, it'll be 1 to 2% that they'll pay, that they'll charge you of the value of the mortgage. But in many, many situations, it can save you a lot of money. If you walk into a bank and you don't know what type of mortgage it is and you don't know what the rates are, so they are going to quote you higher rates than what the average is really, and for sure what the average mortgage broker is going to be paying. If they know the rates, they know the best price, they just got 5 mortgages this week, and they are going to get you the best mortgage out there without you having to sit there and go back and forth between multiple banks. If you want to do it yourself, that is a necessary exercise. There's no way around it. You have to go to this bank, and then you have to go to the next bank, and then once you get an offer from the next bank that beats this one, then you have to go back to that first bank and tell them, I'm going with the other bank, and then they're going to make a new offer, and then you're going to go back to that first bank. It's a process. There's no possible way to avoid it. Okay, so either you go through that process or you don't. Okay, same thing with insurance. There are ways to reduce your insurance, but you have to evaluate, okay, what type of insurance you can really afford. Can you afford all the different types of insurance that you have in Clipstar? Okay, if you increase your deductible is what you would pay in the event of a claim. If you increase your deductible, you can reduce your premium. You have to shop around for insurance as well. I mean, we recently went through this process. We've had the same agent for our car insurance for many, many years. Okay, and they came back with a quote that was 800 shekels higher than another insurance agent that we went to just to get another quote. Okay, so started playing them off, this and that, telling him I was going to leave, this and that. See, eventually he came down, and the entire 800 shekel difference, my original insurance agent, who I preferred to stay with because I had been for many years, ended up giving me the exact same quote as that other insurance agent. And that's a large saving. Okay, it took a few phone calls, it took a little back and forth, but if it's enough money, it's very worthwhile. Okay? The same thing with banking and financial services. As I mentioned, you have to negotiate. You have to know what the norms are. Okay, education, knowing things, knowing what the norms are critical. It's critical in order to get the best price. Okay, it's something even just your regular account, your Shoketh account in Israel. Until very, very recently, the Israeli banking system was not paying anything on the current account balance. That means if you had any money in the plus, positive balance in your current account, they weren't paying any interest whatsoever. So it started to change. Some of the large banks have started to do it very little, but some of the smaller banks have actually offered you 2 and 3% on your money that you have sitting there in your account. If that's important to you, and you know that you're going to have money there on a constant basis, and you don't want to be continually locking it away, because that's what you have to do. You have to lock things away in a separate account in order to earn interest on it in this country. So then you might want to look at one of those banks. Some of the smaller banks like Union Bank and Bank of Jerusalem are offering current account balances. Many times some of the small banks are actually offering you completely free accounts, that they're not going to charge you for any activity because the average bank in Israel is going to charge you for every line item. They'll charge you for every check, every withdrawal, every charge. Okay? Start looking at those as alternatives. Use credit cards to accumulate your transactions. Right? If you have a credit card and it's one charge a month, okay, you can have 10 or 15 or 20 different things that you put on it, and there's only going to be one line item in the bank. That can save you a lot of money, especially if the credit card company is not charging you a large amount. Okay? Shop around, as I mentioned, using online banking. Okay? Again, this is, I think, my favorite cartoon from the book. Many times we think that, you know, there are outrageous fees, everything is high, and that we're really being taken advantage of in this country. It doesn't have to be like that. You just have to educate yourself, and you have to be willing to fight a little bit, not to fight physically, not to fight like, you know, getting angry, but just to negotiate and be willing to, like, talk to your friends and see what they're doing and then quote them. say, I know a friend, and he told me that he's getting X, Y, and Z. Why am I not getting the same thing? Many times, that's all you need to do.
You started answering with how do you know what the norms are?
Okay. As I talked about, in terms of researching, using the list, talking to people. That's the best source of information. Again, you can follow the news. You can follow the financial press. They often bring comparisons and the like, but those are probably the easiest ways of doing it. Talking to people, using the list. There's a tremendous amount of information that the average everyday person has that we just have to tap into. Put it out there. You'll be surprised how much information is there. Okay, utilities. Utilities, we talked about it. Miriam talked to Sam to know a little bit about electricity. Okay, in addition, you should know that there are actually discounted rates that are available from the electrical corporation depending on how much income you're earning. So if you're not earning that much money, take a look at the website and you can see it. You can put in an application to have a discounted rate on your electricity. Okay? There's something that's called a toll system whereby you actually will be charged different rates for electricity usage depending on the time of the day and the time of the year. Now this could be very beneficial for you depending on how you use electricity. If you're not home during the day, the peak hours where the prices are the highest, if you're not using electricity during those hours, you can switch your entire system to that type of usage and it can actually save you a lot of money. Okay, and there's calculators on their website that you can go through and you can put a scenario of, well, this is how I use it to see which type of system is a better type of system to use. Okay, discounts. The municipalities will sometimes offer discounts. If you have a lawn, if you have over a certain amount of people in the house, then you also might be entitled to a discount. If you're a senior, you can be entitled to a discount. Know your rights. No, ma'am, not a senior.
So be careful with what you're saying. It's not everyone. Everything of what you said is correct, but not black and white across the board.
In terms of like discounts, no.
Correct.
Definitely not. Yes, don't misunderstand. I'm not saying that everybody is a senior and every municipality is going to get a discount. I'm not saying that everybody in all, but you have to research what is available in yours.
The need test for us North Americans, if everyone is from North America, is often different than our expectation of a means test from what's a means test? A means test is when a government body like the Selectmen looks at your income, whether you are working or not, your income, if you are a pensioner, they know that you get Social Security and they're not stupid. It doesn't mean that you always have to disclose the gap that you own, but whatever. What we might consider not that much money, they might already consider above the means test. It would be wrong for me to tell you what the number is. It goes either by single or couple. But if you're just over just that amount, you're over. There is very little room for appeal. And that over, so if I tell you that it's either 7,000 shekel mark, that's not that much money for you to feel comfortable to live on for all of your needs.
Yeah, but
I just wanted to add that
question, I guess. Okay. But I'll make one kind of little clarification, which is that even though things are written 7,000 shekels and there is in many, many situations more wiggle room than we think. Okay? Even though it is, that's what the amount is, many times in general in this country, it depends on which courts you speak to and how it's being presented. And sometimes there is, okay? Sometimes there is wiggle room, and we have to be aware of that. Sometimes the answer that we get, the standard answer that we get, whether it's from the bank or whether it's from B2FME, I know many cases of people who have applied to B2FME for different allowances because of disability and the like, and the standard answer you get is, no, you're not entitled to it. And you can walk away from that and just say, okay, I'm not entitled. Or you can be willing to fight a little bit, potentially, and to get other people and other resources to help you, and many times you can be successful. So you can't always just take the standard, well, this is what's written in the B2FME form or the or the area in terms of like this is what to spend and that's it. Because in many, many situations, really there is a little bit of flexibility and it just depends on who you speak to and how you do it. Okay? Again, we spoke about the Arnona municipality taxes. There are certain discounts, again, available. Check out the specifics in terms of age, in terms of income level. Definitely there are discounts available. Okay, home gas is another example of a utility that the price can vary tremendously depending on which company you're working with. Now, it might not be so simple to just switch because in many cases they will supply gas to the entire building or sometimes to the development, but depending on how much the difference is, you can, again, negotiate. You can go to a gas supplier, gather everybody up in the building and say, we're paying, you know, 15 or 16 or 17 shekels per, you know, cubic meter, and the building next door is only paying 11, and we're going to switch to another vendor if you don't reduce our fees. Many times you can go through that exercise and reduce your fees. Okay, it works in things like that, although it's more difficult to do it with gas, because again, gas in many situations is, if it's, at least if it's like done through the infrastructure, not through the balloons that are separate. Okay, but we also see the same thing in terms of cell phones and other utilities, whether it's cable or the like. You have to be willing to negotiate. You have to be willing to call up and find out, okay, how much the going rate is. It's especially important with things like that, with phones. There's been a complete deregulation in the market over the last couple of years with cell phones that has brought prices down tremendously. But don't think that the cell phone companies called their clients and said, well, you were paying 250 shekels and now our going rate is 99 shekels. They don't do that. You have to be honest. You have to be willing to like track and say every 6 months I'm going to make a phone call and I'm going to find out what the cheapest rate is, whether it's internet or whether it's cell phones or whether it's landlines. There are many discounts and there are many ways to lower your bill, but you have to be on top of it. You have to also identify, going back to what we spoke about, you have to identify what's important to you. Is it important that you have a basic line where the quality is a little bit higher, or are you willing to like go into, you know, one of the cable companies like Hot or 012 where you can get a much cheaper phone line, but it might not always be exactly the same quality. The trade-off might be worthwhile. Okay, what about things, some of these other expenses, like using the gemachim? In general, you have to be creative in terms of how you are spending your money. Using gemachim, there's a system here in Israel of gemachim available for almost everything out there. And you have to realize that there are options out there. There are people, whether it's for weddings, whether it's for, you know, tools. You don't always have to go out and buy something. In many situations, you can actually get, you know, borrow, use it in a discounted way. Okay, look in the phone books and you'll see hundreds of gemachim out there. Okay, utilize them. Okay, schools, be willing, again, to negotiate. The schools will give discounts in many situations. They give discounts sometimes because of income issues, that you are earning less than the norm. They give discounts sometimes because you pay in advance. You can get discounts because you have multiple children at a certain school. Okay, every school is different, but just realize that, again, it doesn't always have to go strictly by the book. You have to be able to negotiate. You have to ask around what other people are paying to make sure that you're not paying more than what is the norm. Okay? Things like, you know, hugging, classes. Okay? There are creative things that you can do, whether it's hosting things, whether it's swapping, right? Doing cooperative ventures, finding ways to reduce your costs. I know people who are for babysitting, for instance, they are switching babysitters, meaning you'll have two couples and they live close by, and when one couple is going out, so you'll have one spouse that will go and babysit, and then the next time you'll have the other couple that will do exactly the same. It doesn't sound like a lot of money, but it can make a very big difference. If you go out once or twice a month, and each time it's like, you know, 15 or 20 shekels an hour for 2 or 3 or 4 hours, you can be talking about hundreds of shekels over the course of a month. Okay? And that can make a difference in the long run. Okay? You have to come out of the process, of the budgeting process, to realize that yes, the little things can make a big difference, especially when you have to cut back. Okay, extra 200, an extra 100 here can make a very big difference. Okay, things like clothing, again, the gemachim are a tremendous source. But even if it's not the gemachim, online, secondhand clothes, shops there's a tremendous quality of clothing available if you are willing to go through that process, the extra effort to find. Okay? A lot of free entertainment in this country. You have to just look around, whether it's on the internet, whether it's through the municipalities. You can't afford it, so then you can't afford it. And you have to look at other areas that you can afford, whether it's the free entertainment or the like. Okay? Again, there's a lot of household expenses. Again, you can do anything online. There's like a how-to-do video for almost everything that you could imagine related to household, right? Fix it, whether it's, you know, plumbing or the like. And if you're willing to invest a little bit of time and effort, you can save a lot of money on professional fees as well by doing it yourself. Okay, we don't have time really to go through debt management and the process, and I'm hoping that within the first couple of years that people are here, they haven't racked up a large amount of debt. But it is an important part to build into your budget as well. If you do have a debt, it has to be included how you're going to be able to pay. Right? When we talked about that first year plan for people who are coming to Israel and they have debt abroad, they need to build that into their budget. They need to be thinking about it before they come on Aliyah as well as after, how they're going to pay back that student loan or that loan from the relative or the like. They can't ignore it. Okay? You can't just assume, wow, I don't have to pay it and it's going to go away. Build it into your budget. And if it means that you can't afford that debt with having a car and a house and an X, Y, and Z, so then maybe you can't have that car and the house and the X, Y, and Z and also be paying off your debt. Okay? Okay. A couple last little quick tips, and then I want to go on to one other quick topic. Okay? Finding yourself a guardian angel. What do I mean by that? So everybody here at Nefesh for Nefesh is a guardian angel in the sense that they are people who have been working with Olin. They are people who know the system. They are people that can help you with all the different things that you're encountering on a day-to-day basis, just like you do it with Nefesh for Nefesh. So you also can do it with your local pakid in the bank who speaks English, who can become that person that you can go to ask, how do I get this deal? How do I get that? You know, there are people who work for the government agencies, whether it's Bituach Lumi or Matap Masa, that you might actually have a connection with, that you meet with them one time. Don't be afraid to ask for the number. Don't be afraid to try and connect with those people because they can help you in many situations. Okay, again, we talked a lot about educating yourself and different OLED discounts that are available and researching. Okay, another general piece of advice that I would recommend in terms of when you're making Aliyah, when you've been here, you now, in many situations, are going to start having insurance, assets, wills, whatever it is, in different places, in different countries. You want to make sure that you have a clear listing of where your policies are, where your accounts are, so that you're not losing track of that information. I know many, many, many people who just have lost track of where their accounts are, where their retirement savings are. They move. They try to find you. If they haven't found you after a short period of time, they just report it as an unclaimed asset, and then it's gone, unless you go out and find it. Don't make that mistake. Keep track of all your accounts again. You want that to be available for your spouse, for your family. You don't want them to have to guess. You don't want them to have to, like, you know, start researching where your money, where your policies are, if you had a life insurance policy, if you didn't. Okay, that's all part of the process, okay? Okay, and I want to just talk about a little bit of what an annual statement of net worth is and why it's really important. We really talked about the budgeting process. I really consider the annual statement of net worth as being another complementary tool that you can use. Okay? If you look at the handout, this is what the handout kind of looks like. Okay, well, you'll see a summary of your net worth. Okay, you're going to summarize all your assets, savings accounts, taxable accounts, tax-deferred investments, property, houses, etc., and then you're going to summarize your liability. Why is this important? Why is a net or an annual statement of net worth important? Because it gives you the same bit of information that your budget gives you. It gives you information of where you are in your plan. It shows you whether you're on track or whether you need to make change. Okay? I wanted to show you this. Okay? Look at this example. This person, okay, on the left-hand side, that's money going up. On the right-hand side at the bottom, that's time. So this person, at that period of time, has saved up a million shekels. If I was to ask you, okay, it could be a million shekels, it could be a thousand shekels. It doesn't matter what it is. If I was to ask you, are they in a good situation or are they not in a good situation? What would you tell me?
Depends.
Right. That's exactly what the answer is. It depends. What does it depend on? Okay. It depends on where you are. Okay. So am I on the way up? And that's where I am, and I'm saving, and this is where my goal is, and so I'm on that way. Am I on the way down? I know a family, okay, that called me about 10 years into their Aliyah. They came here with a lot of money. They had a good job. Okay. They were doing great. They had saved a tremendous amount of money. And they came to Israel, and they were on a very, very high standard of living. And they started spending their money, and he lost his job. And it took them a number of years to even realize their fault. There was a problem. Do you know when they called me? They came to Israel with more than $1 million in savings. And they called me when they were $150,000 in debt. How could that happen? The only way that can happen is if you are not tracking where you are. Because if they had come with that $1 million and had seen over the first number of years that their assets were going down on a yearly basis, and that clearly they were living above what they could afford to spend, they would have made changes earlier. But they didn't, because they didn't have any feedback in the system. So taking a look once a year at where you are on the big plan, my goals, again, and if I have this set as a goal, and I'm nowhere near that, and I'm approaching retirement, so what do I have to do? So I either have to start saving a lot of money quickly to get there, which might mean reducing my standard of living. It might mean that I have to adjust my goals and my expectations. I might have to work longer. I know people who were planning on retiring at the end of 2008, and they had money in the stock market, and they literally had their tickets already booked, and then the markets crashed, and they were too much invested, and they lost a tremendous amount of money, and they have to change their entire retirement plan. Okay? You don't want to have to do that. And this tool gives you an example. Okay? Because you see here, what's the example of the squiggly line? Squiggly line is somebody who's making money. Now, where are they in the process? Are they doing okay, or are they in a problematic situation? Again, we don't know. You see, they're coming down. He might have lost his job. She might have lost her job. And now their net assets might have come down. But exactly at that little point there, they might have gotten jobs again, and now they're going to be start saving again. Or they could be in a situation where they just lost their job, and they have no real major way, they have no easy way for them to find alternative employment, and they're going to start using their savings, and that's all they have. So they might have to make some very significant changes in their lifestyle. The only way that you're going to be able to make those decisions is if you have some kind of a tool that you can track. Just like the budget gives us the information on a month-to-month basis, am I on track? Am I spending what I'm earning? Do I need to start cutting back? Is enough money going into savings for the long run? So this tool also gives you that basic information to see where you are in the big picture. And if I'm looking at it in a smaller, short-term picture, it's the same thing when we looked at that first-year Aliyah plan, right? Because what's that first-year Aliyah plan? That also tells us of how much money I'm expected to spend over the course of the year, how much my savings are, how long I can go and I can spend time learning in Olpan before I need to find a job. So if I'm tracking my assets over that period of time, so I'll see whether I'm on track. I'll see whether or not maybe I have to work earlier, or I'll see maybe I'm spending less than what I anticipated, and then I can actually spend more time acquiring the language or doing whatever else I want to do. But you need to still be tracking your assets in order to create information for yourself to make better decisions. Okay? Again, these are just examples, other examples of net worth statements. That's the one we looked at. Okay. As I mentioned to you, at the beginning. So this book, this is my contribution basically to Olin and to the process of Aliyah. We felt when we came on Aliyah 19 years ago that we just didn't have a lot of information available. Things have changed a lot, especially in the last decade because of Nefesh M'Nefesh and other Olay organizations that have a tremendous amount of information. But there still is a lot out there that the average Olay does not know. And so when I wrote the book, and it recently just came out in the last couple of months, my goal was to give the average Olay a handbook, something that can walk them through the financial system. So we talked about tonight, which is the budgeting process. It's in there in a couple chapters. I go into a lot more depth with taxation, investment, savings, insurance, and the like, all the different areas of the financial picture, the landscape in this country that the average Olay should be aware of. Now, again, not everything will be applicable, but many, many things are applicable to the average Olay. And as I mentioned, I continue to say throughout, knowledge is critical. And you need to educate yourself about how the system works here in order to make sure that you're not losing it. Okay, so I hope this was educational, and I hope it'll be only the first step of many. I know many, many, many incredibly successful people who have come on Aliyah and are happy and have successfully integrated into the financial system. And even though it can take a bit of time, and it might not always be 100% smooth, you know, a little bump on the way, that's okay. And you have to be patient with yourselves. And know that there are going to be bumps, and you know, you have to learn a little bit about what overdraft is, you know, going into the minus and how to work the system. But it can be incredibly rewarding, and I wish you all much success.